Welcome back to Creative Conversations with me, Joe Stevens. I'm here today with James Kimber, who is a born and bred Weymouth artist. Or should I say artist?
You can say artist.
Okay, hello James.
Hello.
Could you introduce yourself to tell us a bit about your background and what led you into doing your current work?
Well, my history, I went to school, I left school at 15, went to Western County Secondary School. I left with no qualifications.
Didn't you? What's Western County? What school's that now then?
Is that Budmouth.
And that was the one that's, because your school butted onto the grammar school.
Next to the grammar school, yeah. It's like the poor relation of the grammar school. Very, very much.
The shed at the bottom of the garden.
Yeah, yeah. I went to Western, and then went to South Dorset Technical College. And I just wasn't very good at things at school. O-levels weren't an option for me. I spent a long time on the dole.
Yeah, as we did. That's what the 80s was about.
Yeah, years and years on the dole.
In Weymouth, though, was it?
Yeah. I managed to get into to do a degree by pulling the wool over their eyes. Sort of cheated to get in. But,
no such thing as cheating in there.
No such thing as cheating.
So where was the degree at where?
I went to Plymouth, a place called College of St Mark St John, which was a teacher training place, but it did degrees as well. And I did, I remember sitting, this is really sort of where I became art sort of stuff, was I remember filling out the application form, and the degree I wanted to do was called Recreation and Community. But there were two options. One option was sports related, and the other option was arts related. And I'd been working. The other thing I did during the 80s was I did every government job creation scheme going. And I'd been working as a sports coach for children in Weymouth and Dorset, going around in a van.
All right.
So giving children sports lessons. And I looked at this application form. I remember really distinctly thinking, right, I can either put down sports as my option, but I've already done that. I really don't want to do that. I'm going to try and do art and design. And I was very lucky I got in.
Okay, with no experience.
Yeah.
That's good. Quite a good college, isn't it, really?
No.
Not really?
No. Rubbish. Awful. That awful's a harsh word. It was very much a PE. If you're a PE teacher, it would be one of the best places in the country to go. If you're anything else.
So would you pay £9,000 to do that course again?
Wouldn't be an option. It wouldn't. I just cannot imagine myself in the position I was in. £9,000
paying for thinking that's a course.
You know, because I got full grant to do it, and I lived on campus. The other thing that did change my life quite a lot, really, was I was very lucky in for my second year I did an exchange with an American university, and I spent a year in the Midwest, rural Indiana. That really sort of changed my...
Oh, yeah, that would have been good, very good.
And that was all done through the grant system. I got there, and an unbelievably massive university, there were 50,000 undergraduates, and it had its own airport, its own hospital, it had its own nuclear accelerator.
Different world.
Yeah.
And it's suddenly going into the future.
Yeah. And like the flushness of it all, and it was just really lovely.
After Plymouth,
yeah. Although, you can see it through other people's eyes, you know, so when the reciprocal ones came back to Plymouth, they were wowed by Plymouth. So. But I decided then to look, people asked me what did I do in America, and I looked at naked ladies. After a while, I realised that I could do whatever I wanted as long as I passed. I did life drawing, life sculpture, a thing called human sexual psychology, and volleyball. It was great. That's what I did.
So you then were fully qualified recreational art?
Yeah, I did get a degree in the end in recreation and community creative design, it was called. And then I had no idea what to do next, so I did a postgraduate thing in youth and community work, specialising in community arts.
And has all that paid off, do you think?
Yeah, this is really, you know, how the band started. Well, it is exactly how the band started.
Because you went that's back at Plymouth then, so you did that.
I went back to Plymouth and I had to do a youth work placement, and I hated it. Awful. I went to this awful youth club. Really rough. I really didn't like it at all. And I thought, oh, God, you know, but I'm sort of tied into doing it. And so... From that, a junk band emerged, because one of the reasons was they were refitting the halls of residence, and there were skips of junk outside. So I found some bits of junk, and from there, that's how.
So the idea of the junk band, what were the other influences?
I don't play any musical instrument as such, and it really did all come from the punk rock movement, really. It goes back to the punk rock ethos of start your own band sort of thing. Yeah. And it genuinely was that, really, looking back.
Yeah.
And I was there with a load of kids from the estate. It's just been embarrassingly successful ever since, really.
Well, it's such a great, simple idea, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because them using all that energy.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, they have got that energy.
Yeah.
And being able to smash things really hard.
Yeah, in those early days, that's what it was, really. Mm.
And you're not smashing it hard enough, smash it harder.
Yeah.
You can really see it. Yeah. Great simple idea taken off.
Yeah.
And then it's just a question of you directing that energy.
And it changes from being an amateur thing where you go around and just laugh to a professional thing. When you realise other people are making money from what you're doing. That's what really annoyed me about it.
Okay.
Other people were making money, and I was leading the band on stage, but I was also making up most of the stuff we played, but I was also physically making the instruments. So there's the three strands of what I was doing, and I really enjoyed all of them. But, other people were making money, and I...
What, by promoting you?
Promoting it.
And putting on gigs, and then...
Putting on gigs, and...
They'd give you a bit of money to perform, and...
If we were lucky, it was very difficult to get out of that. Oh, there's a kids playing, there's a kids bashing away. But we very quickly did some very big things. We played at the Albert Hall, and we played at Glastonbury, and we played at Blue Peter, all within the first sort of 6 months, sort of thing. Really,
it must have been scary the first time you went to play something like the Albert Hall.
I've never once had a...
Oh, really?
1% of a nerve.
That's very good. I get incredibly nervous before doing even small things.
Really? I'm more nervous doing this than I would be. honestly.
God, how's it going?
It's just all a laugh. We were on telly quite a lot. Did things like Richard and Judy.
After a long and successful TV career.
Yeah.
You moved back to Weymouth.
Yes.
So what made you come back then?
Lots of things. It was... Not doing very successful in Plymouth. Things went... I was getting bored and...
So you'd had this initial...
And I didn't like the city of Plymouth itself. I didn't really like...
A bit like Weymouth blown up in a way, I suppose.
It wishes it was Weymouth blown up.
Oh, okay.
I know a lot of people say that, and it is a lot... I can see what people mean by that. I didn't particularly like it, and I didn't feel at home there. So I moved back to Weymouth. And then...
I really like this idea of locality. I do really like this idea that I'm embedded within this sense of place that I know and I operate around. Because when you come back, you come back... Did the junk band didn't start up instantly in Weymouth?
No.
That must have taken quite a while.
Well, I still do... No, I'm still with Weapons of Sound, who are based in Plymouth. That's still my main band. And I go around... It changed from a load of, from a real... I know it's a story of rock and roll sort of thing, but it changed from being a real laugh and having just not caring to... I'm now a director of a limited company, insurance and tax and looking after my employees and all that sort of stuff. But I do that over the phone or with emails. And I go down to Plymouth sometimes, but I don't really like it. But we meet up when we go to gigs.
The band that started in the youth club has evolved into a limited company called Weapons of Sound.
Weapons of Sound.
And that's how many people? What's that, eight?
It varies a lot. Sometimes we go out as a three-piece. Sometimes to do performances, it can be up to 10 piece or 12 piece. But it really depends on what the client wants.
And you,
who's available, because everyone's got jobs and that.
And that is that a new play where everywhere around the world?
Play everywhere around the world, yeah.
Okay.
That's for performances. Mm. And then the other thing we do is we do a lot of work in schools. So we do educational workshops in schools where we talk about playing music and recycling. So it's an eco message.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was thinking it's just perfect, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really nice as well. So we go around Britain doing
so the school work, you go around Britain, because the sort of money you pay, you wouldn't have thought there was a lot of income.
Well,
to sort of like pay you to go to Newcastle to do it.
It depends. Well, obviously, you know, the big one is petrol. But we did. We've done a few this year around the country, in Norfolk and places like that, Portsmouth, Bristol.
So if they can book like 5 different schools in an area, it's worth going.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Or if you have a gig up there, you can put on.
Well, the other way of looking at it is, I can get an entire school playing for, you know, however much we charge, but I can get every child who, whether musical or not, playing. You know, if you compare that to the cost of a saxophone.
Because you're talking about the whole school.
Yeah. Then I can put on a performance with the whole school playing in front of parents, and you know, that's what schools really like. For less than a cost of a cello. So it depends how you look at it.
You've got little packages that you can send out.
Yeah.
Did you see there's a new art centre on Brackenbury in Portland, and they're looking for people to go to them with workshops, ideas. It's going to be a community art centre, and they recently had a call out for artists or groups to give them workshops, ideas, which they would then try and sell.
Oh, okay.
Being an artist is an incredibly precarious career. What advice could you give to other artists about building sustainability?
Personally, from my point of view, it's all down to my wife, literally, because it's like there's two aspects to getting a career from it, I think. That is, one is doing it, that's half of it, and the other half is advertising, making sure you get paid, doing all the administration stuff, keeping your diary up to date, sending out emails, answering the phone. And that's the sort of thing that I'm absolutely appalling at. Mm. I've never done that. And my wife does that, and I go out and do...
Play
the stuff, yeah.
But is she a director of the company?
No. There's a slight... the band Weapons of Sound is one thing, and then I've got a company in Weymouth called JK Junk Percussion, which is like my Weymouth arm of my junk percussion empire. They're two sort of quite distinct sort of things. Yeah. They're sort of are and sort of aren't distinct.
Yeah. Artists need an agent.
Yeah, yes, I think so. And I never thought I'd say that, because I used to hate agents and think they used to rip me off all the time.
But it's hard, because I've had previous conversation, it does a lot of the advice does seem to come back to business, all about marketing and business. Mm. And what is very difficult for individual sole traders, really, is to balance everything, to do the work, to market yourself, to do your accounts, to get more work, to promote yourself.
Yeah.
It's just to do it all, and then try and be creative.
Yeah. I tell you what, the advice I'd give to anyone in a, you know, sort of doing a performance or a band or, you know, something like that, I've got 3 pieces of advice. Number 1, turn up. Number 2, turn up. Number 3, turn up. And because Emma's a music agent, and I've seen it so many times. People book an act and they don't turn up. They'll never book you again. You know, if you can turn up on time, brilliant.
But you know how
it's changed, because these days we do a lot of corporate entertaining. Corporate entertaining is like a discipline in itself, in that you get, often we get 3 minutes. So we'll go to London, stay in the hotel, do a rehearsal, do a sound check, and we're on for 3 minutes, and we're off. And it's really important to get on and off really quickly. And, you know, that's where we make money, really. Okay. But 3 minutes, you've got to go on, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what else is happening, you've got to do it in 3 minutes, and then get off. And you're a very, very small cog. There's no rock and roll about it. You're not the stars of the show. You are a tiny little bit.
So if you're any kind of like prima donna, then that gets known.
You can't just go.
Okay, so get an agent and turn up.
Yeah.
On time.
Yeah.
I would imagine then you would classify yourself as a professional artist.
Yeah, I would these days, yes.
So we actually had, before we started recording, we did talk about your job title.
Yeah. I don't like calling myself a musician, because I think it's insulting to other musicians, because I know people who are very good piano players, very good guitarists, whatever. I always feel embarrassed saying to someone, I'm a musician, and they say, what do you play? I bash a sink.
You say you play percussion.
Yeah, but I always feel embarrassed about that. I suppose technically I am a musician.
Because
I always think performer.
Yeah, performer, because that's a bit of a more...
Yeah.
So do you perform, actually, yeah. When you're on there? Yeah. You get all dressed up?
Yeah. I consider myself to be very lucky to do what I do. You know, I've seen places in Britain and around the world. One thing that I will tell you about, because it strikes me, I've been a few times, is I go with my junk percussion band and I play my stainless steel kitchen sink in places abroad. And I feel this incredibly lucky because I've gone to places that my dad went in the war. So my dad went as a soldier fighting fascism. And I've been to Italy and Egypt. I was in Egypt this year, and I went to actually played in El Alamein of all those. Strange. My dad was there during the war, and my uncle was killed there. And I go there to play a sink, and it never ceases to amaze me how the wonderfulness of that, of how lucky I am.
That's good to see, because, like you say, because it does become a job.
Yeah,
it's good to keep that freshness.
Yeah.
Of in your head.
And if that isn't progress, I don't know what is.
Yeah, from war to sink.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like a Spike Milligan play.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and it's really, really weird to do that.
In your opinion, then, do you think it's desirable or realistic for artists to aspire to full-time artistic practice?
Yeah, I'd say.
Because you're being successful as in this, really, aren't you?
Yeah. At the moment, it's going quite well. I'm doing lots of little pieces of work as around the place.
But I'm just thinking,
last year was a particularly good year, I must admit. So we did some really nice, interesting work. I went abroad a few times. It was really nice. And so last year was a successful year.
Well, I'm just thinking about our conversation, really, about being, say, going to college now and paying $9,000 to do the training, just think about the cost of accommodation. I just sort of think the difficulties of. I mean, I do feel for young people trying to make a.
So, like I said, from my point of view, it would have been inconceivable for me, on the dole, living at home, to go into debt. Inconceivable.
I don't think it's necessarily about being on the dole. I think it's just about the mind. Like you say, it's the mindset of leaving, like you, secondary school, educational, so, yeah. With that mindset.
House boy.
That you feel like you're not supposed to feel like you're a failure for failing at 11 plus, but the education that you receive felt like second rate. And then going off and thinking, well, I can do something with my life.
Yeah.
Was just a big mindset, which took years of reconditioning to be on unemployment benefit to think, well, actually, no, I'm not that stupid.
It did take me an awfully long time to think that. I remember getting to university or getting to college and thinking, if I can wing this till Christmas, I'd be really pleased. Just get away with it.
Coming on to the big 2012, we're in 2012.
2012.
The year of the Olympics, Weymouth and Portland become on the global map. Do you know of any cultural Olympiad projects that are going on in the area?
Well, I know about the lasers. That's the only one I know about.
What effect do you reckon the Olympics are going to have on Weymouth and Portland? What do you see after, so it's, Olympics have been and gone?
I've got deep fears, really. I think there's Weymouth Town Centre's got shops that are here just for the Olympics, and the sailing shops and the trendy surf shops, and I think they're going to disappear. I'm really not hopeful about it having a terribly... I think it will have a good effect overall, but in the immediate, I think it's going to really hit home. During the summer, I went to Tallinn.
Tallinn was a cultural city.
Yeah, did some junk percussion stuff in Tallinn. Really lovely city. Really, really nice. I was explaining to these Estonian people. I said, I come from a small town. You're gonna hear of my town because it's getting the Olympics. And they all looked at each other and they're like, did you know that Tallinn was... Tallinn, 1980 Moscow Olympics, Tallinn was the sailing where the same took place. Nobody does. So it was really, it was fantastic. So they took, I went to the site of it. Is it like, you know, the 1980s, you know, height of the Cold War? They built this unbelievable piece of Soviet architecture, so you could view the sailing races, and it was derelict. It's broken, unbelievably big, the size of a pyramid, with the top cut off, made out of granite, and it was all spray paint, broken glass, people urinating.
I don't think it'd be as bad as that, because I am impressed with the business acumen of Portland Harbour.
All right. Okay. So, really?
And the marina, I see them got in the business now to continue that growth.
Yeah.
And to stabilise what they have there, so that side, like I say, I don't see that where we've built anything big on its own. It's all been connected with the growth of the harbour and the marina.
Mm. The other thing is, there's things that I don't know if they are connected to the Olympics, but have just been hurried up. You know, by Ferry Bridge, they're doing a lot of work there.
That new Chesil, that...
Yeah. Is that the actual Olympics?
Not really.
It's not really, is it? But it's going to get done before the Olympics.
Tied in.
Yeah.
A bit like the road. They said the new road would manage the Olympics, but you think... Mm. And the new road system was not to do with the Olympics, apparently. Especially in regards to culture, really, because there is a big amount of money, not just in Weymouth and Portland, being pushed in. Because one of the conversations I've had with other local artists is how they don't feel like they've been part of Cultural Olympiad in the area. But in my discussions, I've realised, well, they shouldn't really have to, you know, they shouldn't have to be, because the Olympics is a national thing. There's no harm in artists coming into the area, doing the work and then going, but a few local artists have felt that they should have benefited in some small way.
It's not really a national thing.
Oh, the Olympics?
Yeah. It's London.
Well, I think all taxpayers in Britain have contributed.
Yeah, but it's not awarded to England or Britain, it's awarded to London. Technically, the Olympics aren't awarded to a country, they're awarded to a city.
Oh, okay. Oh, right, so that's something I'd never really realised. Yeah. And then one artist did say quite a good thing about how she felt that there should be more mentor-type roles. It's okay for bringing a bigger name artist down, but she'd have appreciated the chance to maybe work with that artist to build her practice,
which I
thought was a great idea. We're having all these artists come in to do the work, but it would have been good for, you know, like other lesser-known artists to attach and do a little bit, you know, put on their CV that I've been involved in.
Work with so-and-so.
The other idea that I'm not so sure about is, well, a couple of people said, is that they felt that more money should have gone into having an art centre. They think Weymouth lacks a centre where people can go and meet people. Because one of the reasons why I started this show, that there doesn't seem to be much dialogue between all the different artists and art groups that go on in the area. There's loads of disparate conversations.
Yeah.
And he felt if there was a centre, he could have gone to and then met people. And shared.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? It's, yeah. We haven't got an art centre at all, have we, really?
And the other thing I find difficult with the Cultural Olympiad is what is just an art event that's happening down here, and what is a Cultural Olympiad project. But the other big South West Cultural Olympiad project is they've got this thing called The Island, Nowhere is Island.
And towing it around. Yeah.
Which initially I was a bit sceptical about, but I've been convinced of. Quite like how it's supposed to be opening up dialogues in about identity and art and nationalities and loads of it opens up questions, which is the type of art that I like. I've been swung around. It's a good thing. But there's a lot of negative criticism in the press when it got announced. Yeah. I mean, it's mainly, again, it's about, it comes on to my last question then, really, is about money. You know, that project's cost them £500,000, and people then say, well, that's a waste of money. Then it comes into that thing, well, should we just cut the Arts Council, save millions of pounds of money and give it all off to the libraries or the National Health Service?
If it was a direct choice between the two, yeah, cut the Arts Council. But it's not.
No.
We're a very rich country. Britain can't support an Arts Council. It's a sad day, isn't it?
I wouldn't go quite as far as that, because even if it was a black and white choice, I mean, the discussions... Which is why I've stopped asking the question, is to do with, like, if you gave it to the National Health Service, would they just hire more managers?
Yeah.
Or marketing? Yeah. You just don't have control of their budget. No. And the other argument is, how arts is beneficial to people's health and culture, and you can't separate it out from ordinary life. Like, as soon as you build a chair, you're into art and design.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as you build a house, you're into art and design. So it's so integral to everything.
I do still think, see, the Arts Council is a bit of a rich man's toy, though. It subsidises opera. What they do subsidise, I'm a bit... It annoys me. There's another thing, like with the EU, is they don't actually advertise what they do. You know, so if they do give money to or something, it never really gets... You never really know what it is.
Well, they sort of do, and they sort of... Because I worked with a college that had a lot of EU funding, and everything we did publicised had the EU flag on, had those stars, so right. Everything was like...
Oh, okay.
Had to be part and parcel.
Right.
And I think with the Arts Council, everything you do, but it's... If you're not in that world, it's hard to know all the things...
What
that,
it means.
All the things that have gone on, unless you've seen that flyer and that event.
Yeah.
Hard to see the bigger picture of everything.
Yeah.
Culture, it's all so ingrained that you can't really say, well, let's just take it from there and put it there.
Yeah.
Because we know life's never that black and white, that simple. So I sort of stopped asking it. But as Alex Murden was talking about, it's a lot of ordinary people see it in those black and white terms, really. Mm. They see it, like you say, they see, well, that's a waste of money. Yeah, well, you know, spend it on vulnerable people.
Yeah.
It's a simple decision. Yeah, it's simple. Thank you, James. If anybody would like to find out more about you and your work, is there any particular websites or something you can point people to?
Weaponsofsound.com is my main one.
Lovely. All right. Thank you, James.
Thank you.